bottleneck, tough to say this about the penultimate game of the season, but that's about 2.5 hours of our lives we're never going to get back. Oh, boy. Another blowout loss to a team that entered this series with 100 losses. I'm not entirely sure that really matters, like, all things considered, other than you and I, the fans, obviously, pretty packed ballpark down here at the Rogers Center today. Maybe it doesn't matter other than us just simply wanting the Jays to end things on a high note, but either way, boy, that's an ugly 8-1 loss for the Jays here at the Dome this Saturday afternoon.
Yeah, prior to the game, I said something to the effect of, it's almost certain to be a better game today than it was last night.
You did say that.
And in a literal sense, they lost by fewer runs, but at least yesterday they had some things happen for them. Offensively, they had some fun pitching performances with Tyler Heineman coming in at the end there and nailing down the game. And this one, you know, you've got a Nathan Lucas home run, the first of his MLB career. That is a little bit of a bright spot. You had Yariel Rodriguez finishing the season on a pretty solid note after a rough first inning. But, man, beyond that, this was a death march pretty much from start to finish.
Yeah, a bit of a dog's breakfast, let's put it that way. That's Nick Ashbourne. I'm Shohei Lee. You're listening to Jays Talk live on the Sportsnet Radio Network. We're also streaming on sportsnet.ca and on the Sportsnet app. You can give us a call, 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. You can text us as well, 590-590, name and location. The people's text line always open. Standard data and messaging rates may apply. Yeah, it's true. I mean, the two bright spots, I guess, in this game are Yariel Rodriguez and Nathan Lucas, and I expect we'll spend most of the time talking about those two guys tonight. I do want to get to the bullpen at some point, because we saw basically, like, yesterday we did not see the highest leverage relievers for the team play. Today, outside of Chad Green, you pretty much saw all of the high leverage relievers pitch for the most part. You saw Brendan Little had pitched relatively well over the course of the season. Did not pitch relatively well today. Eric Swanson, we saw Yenesis Cabrera. So I do want to talk about all of those guys. But as we wait for the calls, wait for texts, I do want to talk a little bit about Yariel Rodriguez. Because like you mentioned, Nick, his final start of the year. So 5 innings, 4 hits, 3 runs, all of which were earned. 2 walks, 5 strikeouts, 82 pitches, 54 strikes. He actually finishes his season with a 4.36 ERA over 86 and two-thirds. If you count the minor league innings, it's 107 innings pitched. That's not terrible, I would say, when you consider that that's his first ever season in the big leagues. You know what I mean? Like, you got to see the, on the whole, certainly today to a certain extent, but on the whole of the year, you got to see the upside with his stuff, the selection of the pitches he has in his arsenal. Like, I'm not sure down the stretch here we were ever going to get a particularly definitive answer as to, look, is he as a starter? Is he in the bullpen next year? Many of the listeners had pointed out that due to his contract structure, lack of minor league options next year, he cannot be optioned. So come hell or high water, Yariel Rodriguez is a Blue Jay next season. And I tend to think it is not a terrible fate if Y-Rod is in the bullpen as a long man with the ability to start next year, given the lack of options in the bullpen, as we've discussed before. But I suppose it does mean you need the team to go out and buy another starter in free agency. But I don't know. On the whole, if you're looking at Y-Rod's season, I'm curious how you would grade him, let's say.
He's someone that you have to grade on a curve. It's not about pure results. And to be honest, the Blue Jays are a little bit – lucky is the wrong word, because this has been a really bad season. You could argue it's been an unlucky season. But for his development in particular, the way this year played out – is actually quite good, because they were able to massage his workload, bring him in and out of games in the way that felt safest to them, as opposed right. to really prioritizing, oh, he's really rolling, we got to push him deeper into the game, or he's flailing a bit, we got to get him out of there. Instead, they were able to say, this is actually what we need from him today. We need about 4 innings. We need about 60 to 75 pitches. They were able to kind of tinker with that all year long, and the end goal was to get him a baseline that he can build upon to be a more traditional starter potentially next season if you were to win a job. And so when you have 107 innings pitched, if next year you go out and pitch 150, that's not a crazy buildup.
Right,
and this
right.
is a guy who, again, last year barely pitched competitively, the year before he was a reliever. So they had to let him lay down this foundation. Now, over the year, we saw, you know, he got tired. His velocity did flag. There were moments where things looked a little bit ugly. But they got him through it. The results were okay. Like you mentioned that ERA 4.36, like that's slightly below average, right. But it's not terrible for a guy figuring out this level. He flashed some stuff. He's going to be a really interesting guy to track next season. But if you ask the Blue Jays front office, what do you want from him this year in 2024? I think the first thing they would have mentioned is workload, and that's a check mark. And the second thing they would have mentioned is, did he show us that he could potentially be a starter longer term? They didn't get a definitive answer on that, but the door remains open. And I think this season is a pretty good outcome for them, even though it was choppy at times and even though some of the individual outings were weird because they had to massage the workload and the pitch count.
And they were just so intense, so adamant on managing that pitch count that I think I agree with you when I say if we're talking about how the Blue Jays evaluate Yariel Rodriguez, they have to be pleased, if only because they now have a couple of options with him. And I mean, and again, like, is it a given that he will be the fifth starter next year? No, mainly because I don't think there are any. I would say there are not a lot of certainties about the Blue Jays in 2025. Like, beyond that, Vladdy will be on this team. And I'll say George Springer will be on the team because of his contract. Alejandro Kirk will also be on the team because of his relative youth, I suppose. But he picked it up towards the end of the season. But, like, apart from the obvious candidates, there's not a lot that's 100% known as a slam dunk about this team going into the season next year. And we do know that Y-Rod, like I said, will be on the team. It's just what his role will be. It's probably not something we'll even know until what? Like, until most of the free agents have been signed, essentially?
Potentially,
maybe not even then.
I'd say potentially into spring training. Like, not a lot of teams enter spring training and say, this is our rotation 1, 2, 3, 4,
right,
5. And
right.
If anything, the Blue Jays might have a little bit more certainty there than some other teams because, you know, if healthy, Gausman, Berríos, and Bassett are all in the mix, and Bowden Francis did such a good job down the stretch that you're inclined to believe that he's there too as the number four. So I imagine that Rodriguez will be part of a number five mix where people are competing for a job. Like, he's competing. You could argue he has a leg up, again, because he was able to get this workload in because he showed some things. And because of that contract would look better as a starter than as a reliever, to be honest. You know, I think the only other guy that we know would be in that mix potentially would be Jake Bloss.
Sure.
Because he's a well-regarded prospect. He reached Triple-A. He did struggle when he went to Buffalo. There's no doubt about that. But I think he would have an ability to compete for that spot. And then beyond that, as you mentioned, we don't know exactly what the offseason looks like. But the most likely scenario is the Blue Jays feel like the fifth spot is one that multiple players are competing for, and Rodriguez is extremely likely to be one of those guys.
416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. Go to the text line, 590-590, name and location in a sec. That's the people's text line. So it is always open. Standard data and messaging rates may apply. I see a couple of texts here already, but before we go to the text line, let's go to the phones, Nick. Let's go to Jay right here in Toronto. Jay, what's up? What's on your mind today, man?
Yeah, just a quick question. If next year we get the two bombers in our lineup, what do you think the chances are of those guys like Luke Rafito, Schneider, Barger, all starting in the minors?
So you're saying, like, what are the chances of them starting in the minors if they do sign those two thumpers, essentially?
Yeah, because essentially you cannot sustain those three, as well as, like, Varshall and Springer also, like, swing and miss guys. So you can't have five guys, with the same style of hitting up in the majors, can we?
No, I'm with you, Jay. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it. I think I've been kind of, like, saying something along those lines for a couple of weeks, if only because the logjam the Blue Jays, Nick, have at a variety of positions essentially means even if they do sign two really good bats, two thumpers, as Barker likes to say, even if they do that, I think it really essentially means that the cascading effect is that not everyone can be a Blue Jay next year. Like, maybe if injuries happen and we talk about guys getting called up, that's going to happen. That's just like the way of baseball, the way of professional sports. But it almost is a given that some of those guys, And Jay mentioned Barger, Schneider, and Loperfido. I mean, look at the rest of the roster. Even if you look at the team today, I mean, on the bench today, Luis De Los Santos, Leo Jimenez, Jonathan Clase, Tyler Heinemann, and Stuart Barreau. Like, what are the chances that all of those guys are Blue Jays next year? Very
zero.
Slim,
right? Literally, right? Quite literally zero. Like, you included Jimenez, Stuart Barreau on that list.
Like, Jimenez is probably a Blue Jay next year.
Yes, he's going to be out of options. So that's a big part with him. Like, a lot of it has to do with options. Who can you send to the minor leagues? And outside of Jimenez, who will be out of options next season, they'll have that ability with these guys, with Clase, with Schneider, with Loperfido, with Barger. So guys who don't fit, you know, they're probably getting bumped down to bench roles. Some guys will get bumped down to bench roles. Some guys will get sent to the minors. Potentially a couple of these guys will get traded too. We talk about the amount of position players they have who are sort of MLB ready. You're looking for relief help. You're looking for a variety of things. Some of them might get moved in deals as well. I think it's three buckets. It's your role comes down a little bit. You get traded or you get sent to the minors. But a lot of them will stay in the organization and probably start at AAA and, wait for injuries or poor performances to shake things up.
Yeah, like Horwitz has options, I believe, but I think he's going to be on the team next year, barring a trade. Ernie Clement, I believe, is out of options, but regardless, I also believe that Clement has played himself into a spot next year. So I don't really think we have to talk too much about Horwitz and Clement because they're going to be on the team next season, probably regardless. I said this to you in the pregame show, man. I want to see a little bit more from Madison Barger. It's just specifically offensively. Like, I think I know what Barger is defensively. He has a cannon for an arm. He plays pretty well on the dirt. When he's on the grass and right field, more often than not, I guess he could play left, but for the most part, you want to see him in right. And he acquits himself, all things considered, pretty well, so I feel pretty confident about his defensive work. But offensively, it's so tantalizing, but I just wanted to see him do it a little bit more. And I wonder what he does have to do between now and, let's say, the season to figure that out.
I talk about those three buckets, right? Small role, minors, trade. For me, I would take him out of small role. I don't think he's a great bench player.
Right.
I think he's someone who needs regular bats, in part because his big weakness is that his approach to the plate is a bit raw and unrefined. So I don't think he's someone you want sitting on the bench getting very occasional at bats. I think you'd want to send him back to minor leagues. Like, as you said, he's a little bit raw at the plate. There needs to be more work done there. I think it's either another organization really likes his tools and you move him, or you send him back to the minor leagues. And Loperfido fits in that bucket, too. I don't think Loperfido has done enough since coming over from the Astros organization where you're comfortable saying, oh, he's definitely on the MLB roster. So he's a player who, maybe he's a fourth outfielder type, but, Nathan Lucas is probably a safer bet in that type of role. I could see Loperfido going back to the minors or, again, potentially getting traded if there's another team that really likes those tools.
Yeah, to Jay's question, like I wouldn't be surprised if Barger, Loperfido were the guys going down. I mean, alongside De Los Santos, Clase, Barroa. Heinemann probably won't even be in the organization next year, probably. You never know, I suppose, but it seems unlikely. But Schneider, with David Schneider, it just seems like they have so much confidence in him that I don't think he's necessarily played into a spot on the major league roster this next season because he's played so poorly for much of the second half of the year. But on the flip side, Nathan Lucas, to your point, I mean, today smokes his first major league home run, the bottom of the first inning. Later in the game, he makes a great throw to get the runner at the plate. To end the inning, he had a pretty good game. And I had said to you in the pregame show that if I have my druthers that we were discussing the filling guy for Varsho, if indeed the rotator cuff surgery for Varsho keeps him out for, let's say, like a couple weeks or a month or whatever it ends up being to start the year, if that is the case, then I'm kind of good with Lucas being the fill-in guy over Clase, Loperfido, Schneider. Like, whoever that person is would, in all likelihood, once Varsho returns, flip to being, I'm guessing, the fourth outfielder, if you do believe one of these two thumpers is going to be in left field. But, I mean, there are a lot of options they can go. You mentioned they could always sign two thumpers to be the DH and first baseman, DH third baseman, and leave the left field spot open, which I think is a great idea. If they had to, because it seems unlikely they're going to sign three thumpers, if we're putting it that way. So, I don't know. I think I'm feeling comfortable with free agent in left, Varsho in center, Springer in right, Lucas as your fourth outfielder, and then you kind of go from there.
Yeah, I don't think that's a bad setup at all. I mean, we'll see what happens with George Springer and his continued decline potentially. Maybe that's something that gets addressed midway through next season if he really isn't able to compete as kind of an everyday player. But, you know, that's some doom and gloom that can be dealt with another day. There's already plenty of doom and gloom from this game and in the present. You know, Nathan Lucas, he's really a feel-good story. You know, today was his 781st pro game between the minors and the majors. He worked his way up here. He finally got that first MLB home run. He's someone, because of his age, because he's a bit of a minor league veteran as opposed to a prospect, he's rarely going to get kind of the benefit of the doubt. He's rarely going to get people carving out a spot for him. He has to fight for that spot. And to be honest, everything that he's done since coming up has been working towards that goal. There's not a lot more he could have done with the Blue Jays to prove that he's someone who belongs at the MLB level.
416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. Let's go to Ian in Ridgeville. Ian, what's up? What's on your mind today, man?
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. I wanted to say about Yariel Rodriguez, I don't think he needs to be, or I don't think he should be in the rotation next year. I'm not even sure he should be on the team next year. Like, I mean, in the majors, I think he should start the year in AAA. Work up his innings a little bit more, and then go from there. And I also just wanted to thank you guys for all you've done in the post game shows this year on the weekends, for all the work you guys put in doing that. So thank you.
Ian, thank you for the call, and thank you for the kind words. We appreciate it. It's actually our last Jays Talk. I guess I didn't mention that. It's our last one of the year. Blair and Barker have the – I think they're going to go a little longer tomorrow to put a bow on the season. God bless them, depending on what happens down here at the Rogers Center. But Blair and Barker do a ton of great work. You've done a ton of great work this season, Nick, and I appreciate you joining me here on our maiden voyage this season on Jays Talk. But, you know, as we go back to Yariel Rodriguez, I'll say this for Ian's comment. Ian said maybe he should start the year in the minors. I don't think he can start the year in the minors. I believe he does have one minor league option remaining. So in theory, you could, like, option him today, and then he could start the spring in the minors, but by the end of the spring, like, before the major league season starts, you would have to call him up, or he'd, like, go through waivers, I believe. So I'm not sure they're going to do that. Like, it's kind of reminiscent of the Ernie Clement conversation from last year, where if they didn't put Ernie Clement on the roster, he would have gone through waivers, but Ernie Clement was making, like, $800,000 last year, and if you lost him, from a money perspective, it would not have been a great loss. Whereas with Yariel Rodriguez, they're paying him a boatload of money, so I don't think they're going to be playing any games with that.
Yeah, you know, it's a $32 million contract, which just reflects how much they believe in his talent. And again, he's only been able to show that talent to a certain extent this season because it's his first time for the majors, because they've been so cautious with him. I understand Blue Jays fans who see what he's done and say, that's not enough, that's not someone I want in my rotation. But inside the organization, I think there's a pretty strong belief that he has more to offer than we've seen thus far, partly because the Blue Jays themselves have been limiting him. Again, I'm not guaranteeing he's going to be some great starter for the rotation next year. There's also a possibility that if somehow he is really, really poor in spring training, like he's totally wild, his mechanics are totally off, maybe there is a way to kind of sneak him to the minor leagues because no one wants to touch that contract. But the Blue Jays are likely going to really give him an honest shot to make the rotation. And if not, I think he can dial up his velocity. He's got a bit of a wipeout slider. Worst case scenario, they probably would give him a go as sort of a multi-inning reliever. So, again, I sympathize with people who say, I've seen Yariel Rodriguez, I'm not super impressed. But I just want to remind people, this is his first time through the major leagues. He's coming off a very atypical workload, and he was handled in a very unusual way. And so it's more about talent than results with him.
And to your point, I do think it's if he starts the year as a Blue Jay, I mean, if he's not a Blue Jay next year, it means he was traded or cut. So if he starts next season and he's not a member of the starting rotation, I don't think that necessarily means it's some kind of failure. Because, I mean, gosh, I'll hand up. I thought the Bowden Francis starting train was over at the end of last year, right? We're only talking about that at the end of 2023, and look where we are now. So I think it is possible for things to change. There's a text here on the text line, 590-590, name and location. Rob from Guelph, have we forgotten about Kikuchi's first year? Y-Rod's season was much better than his first season. The answer is easy. If you can get a real starter to sign, then he moves to the bullpen. If not, he is your five, and I would be good with that. And I mean, look, I suppose it is, I guess a third option to Rob's point is, like you said, Bloss is the fifth starter next year, or you just have some kind of stopgap option until Manoa returns, and then you kind of go from there. Either way, I mean, down the stretch, someone like Yariel Rodriguez, I say down the stretch, like down over the next couple of years, I should say, having someone like Yariel Rodriguez is probably pretty important, because you got to remember, I mean, like, who knows what happens in the offseason, but I feel pretty comfortable in saying after the end of next year, Nick, Chris Bassitt will probably not be a Blue Jay, like, probably.
Tough to imagine, you know? Them bringing him back after his age 36 season.
Yeah. So if that's the case, then you're going to be answering this question in part again, right? I mean, after 2025, Gosman will be going into his final year. Barrios will still be under contract. You'll have Alek Manoah. In theory, if things go well, you're having Bowden Francis. So, like, you're still having to answer that question. So I think having him is valuable. But to your point, if he has to start next year in the bullpen, I mean, God, given what we've seen from the bullpen this year, I can't think that's a negative.
I mean, he would definitely help there. I know a lot of people probably are thinking about that binary where it's, okay, you go and get someone and then you don't worry about the rotation, or you're not able to get a starter and therefore he's probably, again, in this competition for a spot. I just think the second scenario is significantly more likely. Like, the Blue Jays do not spend like Steve Cohen. They do spend money, but they don't spend crazy money. And there is, you know, there are significant holes on this team that need to be addressed. The lineup needs a significant upgrade, both in terms of power and just kind of overall quality. There's sort of three spots on the diamond. They'd like to address at least two of them. The bullpen needs a complete overhaul, which is difficult to do in free agency, but they probably will bring in some arms there. You need another catcher as well. So that's a pretty long shopping list. Yeah. When you feel like you have a feasible fifth starter situation, which I'd say they do as of this moment, investing money into that, which is normally eight figures, like, to get a credible MLB starter, you're normally starting around $10 million. To have that eat into the pool of money available to you, I'd be surprised if that's the way they go about it. I think they feel okay about it. To be honest, if you think about most teams in the majors, even really good teams, like, who's got a dynamite fifth starter?
It's true.
Nobody really does. Like, most teams have kind of three, four guys they trust, and then they figure it out from there. That's the direction I see the Blue Jays going.
Yeah, I'm just looking at the list of free agents next year, whether it's, like, options, straight-up UFAs, player options, opt-outs, like, whatever, all the variety of pitching play or pitchers, rather, who are available as free agents in some way, shape, or form. And, I mean, like, yeah, if you look at this, it's like the Scherzers, Verlander, Cole could opt out, Blake Snell is a free agent, Robbie Ray could opt out, Lucas Giolito is available, Nathan Eovaldi is available, Corbin Burns is going to be a free agent. Like, there are a lot of guys, but I don't see the Blue Jays investing significant amount of capital knowing that they have to spend, like, it kind of feels like $40 million probably on two guys for the position players, right? Like, I've long said, you know, if it's $20 million and $25 million, depending on the quality of bat, that'll be enough, I think, to solve a lot of the problems offensively. And, gosh, I scored one run today, and you better believe they need that kind of support next season. But I just don't, because of that, I just don't see a big part of 2025's, or the in-between, the 2024-2025 offseason, I don't see a big part of that being spending on, like millions and millions, $15-20 million on a fifth starter, essentially.
Yeah, and when you think about starting pitching, the other thing to remember is every team in the major needs it.
Yeah.
Because, as I just mentioned before, most of them don't really have a great fifth starter, or, to be honest, fourth starter in a lot of cases. And so if you go out and get a good starting pitcher, that is always an upgrade for your team, because they can always bump that fifth starter out and replace in the rotation. So every team, if they go and get sort of a credible starter, in almost every case, that will make their team better, whereas they might have a third baseman, a first baseman, a second baseman. So there'll be certain free agents that they just don't even approach because they wouldn't represent a meaningful upgrade for the team, whereas the starting pitching market is always wide open because everybody is willing to entertain the idea of making their team better by beefing up the rotation.
Speaking of starters, John Schneider, just talking to the media, he says no starter named for tomorrow yet, but Yarbrough will pitch at some point tomorrow. So they're not prepared to say Yarbrough is the starter. I don't know. Does that, for my first interpretation of hearing that, is that it's not going to be Jake Bloss, I feel like.
No, I'd be surprised. It's just a bit of a weird thing. A guy that is relatively well thought of by some accounts, maybe even the top prospect in the organization, to kind of airdrop him into this. Something of a surprise, too, because, you know, there was talk of Bassitt making the start, and then last minute you say, you're top prospect,
right,
pitch the last
right.
game of the year. If anything, it would be maybe more of one where they, you know, bring someone up from AAA who's more of a minor league veteran. We saw Wes Parsons, for instance, in
that's
years
right.
past, just take a start. It could be something like that, someone to compliment Yarbrough. But if you're a Blue Jays fan thinking of tuning in tomorrow, do not expect to see a big-time prospect or a prestigious pitcher take the mound for your team?
I'm just trying to think of who it could be. I mean, maybe a Brandon Eisert. He's the guy who gets called up for doubleheaders, I find often. So maybe someone like an Eisert. I don't think it's going to be an Adam Macko or a Bloss. Would I greatly enjoy that? Yes, because they're some of the higher starting pitching prospects in the organization, but it seems unlikely. It seems like it's going to be someone who's only going to throw. Like, what they've done in the past is, especially in the last like month or so, is they've opened, quote-unquote, for Yarbrough, where Yarbrough gets the bulk work, and they've just used Ryan Burr. It's been Burr and then maybe someone in between, depending on who's at the plate, and then after the inning is over, Yarbrough gets the bulk. He goes four or five innings, and you kind of hope for the best, essentially.
Yeah, I think whoever starts is probably thinking to pitch, maybe two innings, and then you get Yarbrough to pitch in an ideal world five, but maybe more like four, and then you run out a couple other guys that pitched on Friday.
That's Nick Ashbourne. I'm Sho Ali. You're listening to Jays Talk here on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Let's take a quick break here, Nick. And on the other side, we'll go back to the phones, 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, star 590 on your cell. And we'll go to the text line. Lots of text here on the text line, 590-590, name and location. Keep them coming. We'll read as many of them as possible on the other side. You're listening to Jays Talk. The Jays lose 8-1 in the penultimate game of the season. We'll be back after this on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
John, he's never done it, but is batting Vladdy leadoff tomorrow a consideration?
Might, yeah. I think with it being the last game of the season and trying to get 200 hits, we might do that. We've talked to him a little bit, so we'll see how it rolls out.
That's John Schneider talking to Hazel May downstairs after his or during his post-game media availability about the possibility of batting Vladdy leadoff tomorrow. Vladdy, of course, went 0-4 today and did not have a hit, so he is still stuck on 199 hits as we enter the final game of the regular season tomorrow at the Rogers Center. Blair and Barker will have Jays Talk for that game. You're listening to Jays Talk right now, though, with Sho Ali and Nick Ashbourne here for about 15 more minutes. If you want to give us a call, 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, star 590 on your cell, 590, 590, name and location. We'll go to the text line in a sec. I guess it makes sense. If you're trying to get Vladdy to 200, that's like the only thing that
matters. What else are they playing for, to be honest? Like, why not? Yeah, throw him out there at leadoff.
He'll get as many ABs as possible.
Oh, no, he hit a home run and there's no one on base. Like, who cares? it's the best place to get him, and the most possible bats, the most chances to get that elusive 200th hit. It's actually the only place in the order he's never appeared in his entire big league career. Some of them, to be fair, he has one plate appearance in the eighth spot and two in the seventh spot, so there are a few that you've basically never seen him, but this is one he's literally never done, and yeah, why not get him the mathematical best chance to get this milestone? That would be, just a fun little cherry on top of a fantastic season for Vladdy.
I hope what happens, if that's the case, I hope what happens tomorrow is he comes out and he just takes a hack on the very first pitch of the game. Don't wait. Just swing at that first pitch, Vladdy, and see what happens.
I'd like to see him, just choke up on the bat and just go, just try and hit, Ichiro for a day. Just trying to slap it over the infield, make no attempt to get into the gap or get it over the wall. It's just about a hit.
Yeah,
that's all that matters.
Bleeders into the infield, into the outfield, whatever you get from Vladdy. I'm with you. Nothing about tomorrow's game matters, so I'm totally with you. Let's go to the text line, Nick. 590-590. Name and location. Mike in Victoria. Pretty obvious the Marlins have a better AAA team than the Blue Jays. I mean, that's kind of what we've been seeing in the last little while. I don't think, beyond, let's see, Jesus Sanchez, Jake Berger, I'd say Connor Norby as well. I'm not sure I've seen a lot of these other guys play a lot of baseball, if I'm being completely honest.
Xavier Edwards is a player, for sure.
The triples thing from yesterday was
pretty
cool.
He's a really interesting young hitter, but yeah, this is a lineup that is short on recognizable names. It's worth remembering the Marlins came into this series with a 59-100 record and a negative 223 run differential. This is the team the Blue Jays have been getting clobbered by this weekend.
Jim in Burlington says he says excuse the spelling, which is fair. I mean, I'm not the greatest speller either. Jim says I think he means Davis Schneider, Barger or Loperfido are on the Blue Jays at any point next year, they're in trouble. So, and look, I mean, we kind of talked about this already. I think Schneider has the best chance just because he has been given so much runway maybe it's also because he's produced the most out of any of those guys, also because he's played with the Blue Jays the longest. So that kind of, to a certain extent, goes hand in hand. But I think there's a chance he's on the team next year. But it's kind of crazy to think that if you're going into 2025, based on how his season, even if something crazy for him happens tomorrow, I'm not sure it's going to change anyone's overall opinion on him. But it is kind of interesting to think that, like, if coming into this season, it kind of felt like Ernie Clement and Spencer Horwitz were the 26th and 25th men on the roster. Next year, it kind of feels like it'll be David Schneider might be kind of below them in the order of things.
It's been a wild trajectory for him. I think I heard that when the Blue Jays released that City Connect jersey, Schneider's was the most popular sold at that point.
Really?
Because he had been really good through April and May, right? So people had seen him being incredible at the end of 2023, and then he looked fantastic out of the gate this season. So a lot of people felt like he was kind of the emerging player on the team and the fun guy to support over the long term. No one knew if Vladdy was going to be around, which I guess is still up in the air. I think those players probably will have some role to play with the Blue Jays next year if they are still in the organization. They could, one or two or even three, could get traded in the offseason. We talked about this logjam earlier in the show. But it's just worth remembering that injuries happen, poor performance happens. These guys are maybe more depth. I think if they are penciled into the starting lineup as guys that you are counting on as everyday players, absolutely the Blue Jays are in trouble. But if they are part of, you know, the depth of position players on the bench at AAA who find their way into at-bats over the course of the year, I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing.
Mike and Angus says, I'd like to see Vladdy drop a bunt for his 200th tomorrow. You know what? That'd be kind of funny. An infield hit for Vladimir Guerrero Jr. Probably unlikely, but it would be. I won't disagree that it wouldn't be funny. This one is from, actually, there's no name on. Oh, Keith from Guelph actually that said this one. Keith says, trade Bassett and bring back Kikuchi. And look, you know what? I've said all along that it seems unlikely that Kikuchi is signing with the Blue Jays, primarily because he's going to get paid a lot of money, right? I mean, he's pitched well enough, and he's been awesome with the Astros. We'll see what he does in the postseason, but, I mean, if you think the Astros are going to make a relatively deep run, he is going to be a part of that run, whether you like it or not. And I would just like to say I'm happy for Kikuchi, because I was afraid, based on what the Astros gave up to get him, that if he got beat up even just a little bit, Astros fans would turn on him. I think they'd really like him because he has been filthy for them for the most part. I don't think he's lost a single game. I know that's not the be-all end-all, but he's been really, really good. And I don't think he's going to test free agency, I'm sure. It's unlikely he comes back to the Blue Jays because of money, Nick, but if Bassett's contract is not on the books, that does become a little more possible.
Yeah, I understand the inclination to want to bring him back. He was great with the Blue Jays for, you know, a year and a half there after his rough first season with them. And Bassett, you know, probably isn't fantastic value on the last year of his contract. But you sort of knew that given his age. You gave him a 3-year deal. You probably thought we're going to get more value than we're paying for in the first year. And then the second year might be kind of more what we're paying for. And the last year, he might be a bit overpriced. That's kind of how those contracts work with a player of his age. And there's still hope that he's sort of a, you know, 3-4 innings eater for you that you can rely on. I don't think he's a player who really excites Blue Jays fans anymore. I understand why you'd want to get him off the roster, but he'd also be a relatively difficult guy to replace. Quick note on Vladdy and the bunt hit. He has 905 hits at the MLB level at this point. Absolutely zero of them have come via the bunt, so maybe it's time for something new.
Well, Mike Romangus also says, or how about a 500 level bomb for his 200? I think people would like that. I'll say this. That seems more likely than a bunt.
Yes, yeah, in a literal sense. Yeah, we're splitting hairs on things that are kind of less than 1% to happen, perhaps, but that would certainly be fun to watch. The problem with Vladdy is that he hits a lot of those lasers. He doesn't hit as many of the kind of towering fly balls. So he's hit – it's more about kind of the exit velocity readings and the way they rocket out of here, sort of – Giancarlo Stanton style, as opposed to those huge towering bombs.
It's true. Vladdy balls, I feel like on home run calls from Dan or Ben, you often hear, like, that ball got out of here in a hurry, because those are the kinds of balls he whips out of the park. Jen in Toronto on Vladdy says, I can't see the team attracting good players without Vlad being signed. Do you envision a contract for Vlad with many opt-outs? Why wouldn't he test the waters? It's certainly possible he just takes the whole negotiation to free agency after the end of next season, but I just feel like it would be, like, if people want to say, hey, like, why, like, what does the team have to do? The locker room clean out at some point, I think, is next week at some point. It's like Tuesday or Wednesday, probably Tuesday, I believe. So if that's the case, then what does Shapiro and Atkins need to say to the media, really to the fans via TV and radio? What do they need to say to convince people that the team is being serious when it comes to signing big free agents? And the truth is, and Blair said this yesterday, the truth is that it will be signing Vladimir Guerrero Jr. I don't think they're going to like announce a contract extension for him next week, for example, but just getting that done, I think, behooves them far more than it does any other team, which is why I think it will get done before the beginning of next season. But I'm with Jen. I do think the other thing, too, is to make sure the Jays are taken seriously by opposing other players, agents and free agents and so on. You got to think that for them to look at a team that's going to finish at best, what, I guess, 11 games under 500, essentially, after today's loss, if they win tomorrow, you know, the best way to make sure that those guys are taking it seriously, I would think, Nick, is just to say, hey, look at this star player we gave a boatload of money to, and he's going to be here for the long term.
Yeah, putting one of those contracts on the books is a bit of a statement of intent. Because if you say, you know, here's our contract that's over $300 million, but we're rebuilding, like, it doesn't really work like that.
Yeah,
teams
yeah.
that are rebuilding don't generally invest in individual players that way. As far as the opt-outs go, I think it's pretty likely you'll see opt-outs with a Vladdy contract because he's so young, he's going to justify, you know, a 10-year contract potentially, possibly even longer than that. And when you're that young and you're getting a contract at that length, it's probably something where you'd like to have a little bit of flexibility to hit the free agent market again, because he could do it again at a young enough age that he could get another mega yeah. contract if he performs at sort of a, you know, one of the best hitters in baseball kind of level. Like, I could see there being an opt out for him at sort of 30, you know, after 5 years, something like that.
Yeah.
And it's just become more and more common in today's game where players are just trying to get the most flexibility and the most earning powers possible, which makes sense. And especially when you have a guy who's a little bit younger who could hit free agency again and still get a mega deal. That's where an opt-out makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, there, if you look at some of the other mega deals that have been signed in the last couple of years, Tatis, Julio Rodriguez, I know he had a bit of a down year, Bobby Witt Jr. even, there are a lot of opt-outs in those deals. It seems pretty common, I think, for a lot of the young stars. It was a little different with Bobby Witt Jr. because I think they had to buy a lot of the Arbiers and so on, too. So it's slightly different for him. He's a little younger, but still, I think that makes the most sense with Vladimir Guerrero Jr. My bold prediction, Nick, was that he signs a long-term extension on or before Halloween. That was my big prediction. Essentially, before free agency, like, really opens after the World Series.
That would be a good outcome for the team. I could see it dragging out a little bit just because he has so much leverage,
yeah.
and this front office has always been very value-oriented, and so I think it'll be a little bit tough. Like you, I believe he has the most value to the Blue Jays of any team. I believe that he wants to be here. Those factors come together in a way that you're inclined to believe at the end of the day he'll come back to Toronto Blue Jays, but I don't see it being an easy negotiation because he has so much leverage, and this front office, generally speaking, really likes to fight to a specific dollar value when it comes to individual players.
Nick, we have a couple minutes left here, and I'm going to use it just to say that this was the last Jays Talk Classic for us this season, and we've done this show quite a bit. Our record ends up at 8-4. After this game, which is a respectable record.
I mean, in the context of this season, it's a fantastic record.
You take that over 162, you'd be very happy with that. So, I take an 8-4 regular season record with you. Look, it's been a lot of fun. It's been nice becoming friends with you, learning more about you personally. It's too bad we couldn't do this into the playoffs, but it's nice to do this, and hopefully we get to do it again next year.
Yeah, it would have been great to do it in a different competitive context for your Toronto Blue Jays. But it has been a pleasure. We've been out of the ballpark. We've been in the studio, spent a lot of time together. It has been fun to be a part of this team. It's something that I never personally really expected to do. It kind of fell out of the sky for me. I think you and I have done, again, with spring training and Blue Jays Talk Plus, something like 20, 21 shows over the course of the year. And yeah, it's been a real treat. I hope it's been a treat for the audience. To be honest, it means, you know, it makes more of a difference if the audience likes it than I like it. That's one person. You can't make any money in advertising
it's
pleasing
true.
One person. So I hope the audience has enjoyed it, because I certainly have. And it warms my heart to hear that you have as well.
That is the great Nick Ashbourne. I'm Sho Ali. I appreciate you being with us on Blue Jays Baseball this season. Brought to you by the local family-owned Crown Rust Control Centers in Niagara Falls and St. Catharines, Ontario. Protect your vehicle from rust today. Find your local family-owned Crown at Crown.com, Canada's number one rust protection. For Nick Ashbourne, Ben Shulman, Chris LaRue, Tom Young, Nick Blackmore, Luke Swadron, I'm Sho Ali. And that does it for me as well on the postgame show this season. It's my last show of the year, and Before we go, I just wanted to say, if you've ever called or texted, whether you agreed with or hated with what I've had to say, whether you think I'm a massive blowhard, which is honestly, it's very true, I appreciate you if you've weighed in at all, because like Nick said, you're the reason we do this show. It's to get your opinions out in the world. I'm merely the vessel, but I love hearing from you all. I love doing the job. I love working with Blair and Barker as well. And if I've learned one thing, it is that the passion of Jays fans will be forever undefeated. So thank you so much for joining me and my pals this season. However, we do have one more game to go, people. Tomorrow, Blair and Barker put a bow on the season. Be sure to join us post-game. They will take your calls. They'll take your texts. Let's make it a good one tomorrow. We'll talk to you later.